Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last February, a Wisconsin court made a major ruling.
A Wisconsin judge has ordered the state DNR to start a wolf hunt this month. The Trump administration removed wolves from the federal endangered species list in January, returning management to the states.
On January 4th, 2021, the United States Department of Fish and Wildlife, under the Trump administration, officially removed the gray wolf from the endangered species list. Wolf management shifted entirely to state and tribal governments. In Wisconsin, the state's wolf population had risen from a low of just 25 animals in the early 1980s to more than 1,000 by 2020. And so, after the removal from the endangered species list, the state authorized the first wolf hunt in Wisconsin in 7 years. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources initially set the hunt date for November 2021. Hunter Nation, an advocacy group, sued.
But a pro-hunting group filed a lawsuit to force an immediate start. And today, a county circuit judge ordered the DNR to hold the season in February.
The Wisconsin wolf hunt opened on February 22, 2021. It was set to end 6 days later on February 28th. But the season closed just 3 days later, for reasons you'll hear about in a moment. The state approved a kill quota of 119 wolves. The Department of Natural Resources made 2,300 licenses available via lottery, and more than 12,000 hunters applied. Dave Mabee lives in Pierce County, Wisconsin. He went wolf hunting with his friend, who'd won a coveted tag.
We had fresh gnoll all 3 days, which is huge, makes a big difference. The temperatures were warm. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything better than the weather conditions we had.
Dave went out hunting on day one, February 22nd, with his three sons and his dogs.
A couple of my friends drew tags, and there was a pair of them to start with, and we ended up on the larger male. And we ran it for approximately 6 hours.
Good girl, Leah. Good dogs.
That sound posted on social media by another hound hunter. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that allows wolf hunting with dogs.
As a crow flies, it went about probably 7 miles. It ran from west to east, and then it made a loop and went back to the west about that 7 or 8 miles. So you have to stay with them on a, you know, in a truck. You want to keep up. At one point, I had two dogs on it, and then one of the dogs fell behind in the race. And actually, it's my smallest female pot hound that ran the wolf most of the time by herself. And eventually, the wolf ran down a river, and one of the guys shot it.
I got him. Hit him again. He's dead. He's down.
Dozens of wolves were similarly hunted that first day. Two more in the sound you're hearing now from a video of nighttime kills posted by another hunter.
Dude, you just shot yourself. I just got a wolf.
People don't see wolves up close that often, and we shot a coyote earlier that morning, and I show a lot of people that picture of just the sheer size difference. The wolf was probably just under 90 pounds next to a 30-pound coyote. I mean, obviously, just the size, you know, 90 pounds to 30 pounds. They're big animals.
Over on Dick Sam's, and it's likely across there.
They got him stopped. They keep stopping him. He's right by Andy's brother's cabin. They should hold him. I could hear him. It was a vicious battle. They're all treed up again.
Squirrel's just turning off of Schmidt Lane. He'll be there in 2 minutes. He's gonna cut all four that he's got with him.
Hound hunting is controversial in Wisconsin. Wolf Patrol, a conservation group, tailed groups of hunters for 3 days. documenting radio chatter, like you just heard, and what they call evidence of what amounts to legalized dog fights as the hounds run down the wolves. But hunter Dave Mabee disagrees. He says hound hunting is legal, controlled, and something he's done all his life.
In the area where I live, probably about every fifth house has hound dogs tied up outside of it. And when I was 14, I bought my first hound. It just always thrilled me hunting with hound dogs. And I remember, you know, reading books when I was a kid about hound hunting, of course, where the red fern grows. And I've had hounds ever since. And I have 13 plot hounds, one beagle and two basset hounds, which are his pets. Before I got my bigger hounds, I had beagles that I rabbit hunted with from the time I was 6 years old, but got into bigger hounds, started out coon hunting, that led into bear hunting, to coyote hunting, bobcat hunting. And eventually when the season came along for hunting wolves with hounds, I started doing that as well. It's the thrill of turning a dog loose and the satisfaction of starting with a puppy and getting it to the point where you turn it loose, and it's just the thrill of the chase. It's, you know, so many people believe that hounds are just out there and they're killing everything in their path, and, you know, that's just not the case, not even close. Some people, it was pretty emotionally charged, because every year there's bear hunters and bobcat hunters, coyote hunters that lose their hunting dogs to the wolves. So, you know, to some degree, for some people, it was finally an opportunity to, you know, I guess, for lack of better words, be, you know, for kind of some payback. You know, the unfortunate thing is with a lot of hounds that get killed by wolves, it's your older dogs. It's your, you know, your dogs that you've had for 10 years. So yeah, it's tough, you know, and when you've had a hound, a pet, for that many years, and it's not easy to see them when you walk in and, you know, they're half eaten by the wolves.
The February 2021 Wisconsin wolf hunt was slated for 6 days. It ended in 3. Hunters blew past the kill quota of 119 wolves. They took almost 100 more, 216 wolves, according to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Should we, would we, could we have closed the season sooner? Yes, said Eric Lobner, DNR wildlife director. Did we go over, he said? We did. Was that something we wanted to have happen? Absolutely not. The Department of Natural Resources also reported that almost half the wolves killed were females, and 86% of the wolves were taken by hunters using dogs. Hunters like Dave Mabee, who says the numbers don't tell the full story.
Absolutely. I respect, you know, folks that are opposed to hunting and especially wolf hunting. But at the same time, it's so easy to sell the barbaric event and, you know, and what have you. You know, it's wrong. You know, I've told people for many years of different places I've spoke that come along, come with me, see what it's actually about, because I'm pretty certain that you spend a day in the woods with me, your opinion of hunting with hounds and hunting in general, you're going to say, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. You know, it's not about killing. You know, it's about the hunt. It's about the camaraderie, the hounds, and the, you know, the friendships that were established on these hunts. And that's what it's about.
Dave Mabee, hunter from Pierce County, Wisconsin, talking about the first wolf hunt in 7 years that took place in Wisconsin last February. Now, we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about how Wisconsin even got to that February hunt, because below the surface, it's a very complicated story. Another hunt was planned for last November. That was put on hold when a number of lawsuits went to court seeking to prevent future wolf hunts. The cases are being led by America's indigenous tribes. In September, more than 200 tribal leaders and environmental groups sent a strongly worded letter to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland demanding the emergency relisting of gray wolves. Taking the wolf off the endangered species list, the letter stated, quote, further erodes tribal sovereignty by not consulting with Indian country and ignores our collective voices by failing to give any thought to our interests, sacred ceremonies, and cultures. Halland is the United States' first indigenous cabinet member. She promised in her February 2021 confirmation hearing, quote, I will honor the sovereignty of tribal nations and recognize their part in America's story, and I'll be a fierce advocate for our public lands. But thus far, Halland has not responded to the tribal leader's letter, and she has refused to meet with tribal leaders to discuss the gray wolf's future. One of those leaders is Tom Rogers. He joins us now. He's acting president of the Global Indigenous Council and a member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana, and he's with us from Washington. Tom Rogers, welcome.
Oki, that is Blackfeet for greetings.
Thank you for that. Can you tell us first, what does the gray wolf mean to the Blackfeet and the other indigenous tribes that are gathering together to try to get it relisted on the endangered species list?
Well, Magna, as opposed to the narrative or the story that Dave laid out, the wolf is central to our creation stories. It is viewed as a sacred brother and sister to our people. It is viewed also as critical to our afterlife. So where our experience is life-affirming, his experience is death. And it is, but we as indigenous people are like the wolf, and the wolf's name is Mokie. That is our name for the wolf, the red mouth. And Mokie is subject to the same myth-making and massacres that native people, indigenous people, have experienced, whether it be that ultimate marketing campaign of Manifest Destiny or the Pine Ridge Massacre of 300 women and children and old men or the Baker Massacre of 200 or the Sand Creek Massacre or even the ultimate pandemic for native people in this country where 90% of us were exterminated by smallpox, measles, and flu. So we share the same, sadly, narrative that the wolf does with the reference to the big bad wolf raised by wolves.
Yeah.
What Dave forgot is that we are, the DNA that his dogs experience is the same as the wolf of 35,000 years ago.
Tom, hang on. Just 1 minute break here. I want to hear a lot more from you when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit. Period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the complex story that led to the first wolf hunt in Wisconsin in 7 years last February, and how that story is not yet complete. And I'm joined today by Tom Rogers. He's acting president of the Global Indigenous Council, a member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana as well, and he's with us from Washington. And Mr. Rogers, I'm wondering if you could actually just tell us more. I want to get a deeper understanding of the centrality of the wolf to many of the tribes of the United States. I mean, I've been seeing that for the Chippewa, the Ottawa, and others. The wolf is actually even central to creation stories of the land upon which those tribes have been have been living. It's a creator. Can you tell us more?
Yes, it is. As I referenced earlier, Magna, it is life affirming. It is. There are four things in life that'll change you: love, music, art, and loss. I always say that the first will keep you wild and full of passion, and the last will hopefully make you brave. In our Blackfeet culture, our native culture, the wolf's trail is the Milky Way. And I have personal experience with this because I lost my partner to cancer here about 3 months ago. And at the 12 hours before her death, I told her I had an image of the Milky Way printed off of her, and I put it at the end of her bed as we were discussing her end of life. And I said, "My love, this is where you will go. You will go to here. You will go to the wolf's trail, the Milky Way. But you need to promise me, once you become a star, that you will light campfires for me so that I can find you along the wolf's trail." And she turned to me and said, "Oh, my love, please take your time. You have so much good work left to do." So the wolf speaks to us as our brother, our sister, and it guides us to the afterlife, and it guides us to the ones that we loved and we lost.
So the wolf's centrality and its spiritual and cultural importance to Native peoples of this country is clear. And I appreciate you sharing that story with us, by the way, Tom. Mm-hmm. There's another layer here, though. I mean, in the last segment, I had mentioned that when the wolf was delisted from the Endangered Species Act by the Trump administration in January of 2021, that put management of the wolf to the states and tribal nations, tribal governments as well. So what is the concern that tribal leaders have about how that management was enacted that led to that February Wisconsin hunt and other hunts we've seen in various states?
Well, it was, Magna, it was intensely personal to all the Native brothers and sisters of this country, the indigenous people of this country, because it was like being injured by a good friend. It was suffering a loss of innocence and a loss of trust. Because the president, and I am a huge supporter of the president, in his own executive order issued on January the 26th, of 2021, stated the need to listen to tribes, fully engage them, and promised under his own executive order, which was reaffirmed, which was 13715, was to listen to us. And when the statement came out in mid-July on a Friday afternoon that the current administration, the Biden administration, would adopt the position of the Trump administration, that was such a horrible blow to our soul, to our innocence, because whether it was Secretary Hollande or even the president himself, these were our friends, these were our brothers and sisters. It was extremely dispiriting, disappointing. And I say, Magna, no person should be judged on one day in their life or one decision in the landscape of their life. But that was soul-crushing for the Native people, that they would do the same things that the Trump administration did, and the centrality that the death that meant, because that is state-sanctioned extermination, what is occurring now. And I cannot tell you how disappointed, because we had already scheduled a meeting with the secretary on this issue. And so a decision had been made to go forward with the same position as the previous administration while we were waiting to have that meeting. Mm. And so the decision had already been made, and we were, like I said, it was soul crushing.
Yeah. So let me just step in here for a second, because there's a lot in what you've said. First of all, if my understanding is correct, tribal leaders, both in the letter that was sent to the Biden administration, that September letter from last year, plus the various lawsuits that are making their way through courts in different states. The assertion is that tribal leaders were not, or tribes were not, adequately consulted around decisions regarding the hunts for the wolf and the wolf hunts, and that they, and that governments are legally bound to consult the tribes. Is that correct?
That is correct. And President Biden has, and both President Biden and Vice President Harris have affirmatively stated that in their own Biden-Harris tribal plan. They've reaffirmed it in their own executive order. And I truly believe that Secretary Hollande and the Assistant Secretary, they know this. I believe that they will make a good faith attempt to remedy it, because they know, being Native themselves, that on this one they failed. And I think they carry that burden in their soul, and they are trying, knowing them as I do, I believe fervently that they will seek to remedy this wound with their Native brothers and sisters, because it is a wound, and it is still very, very raw. And it is, as you know, Meghna, it is one thing to disappoint your adversaries. It is another thing to injure your friends.
Yeah. Well, in the letter, these tribal leaders, including you, write that in order to avoid rendering President Biden's commitment and promise to Indian country meaningless and to put a hold on the continued slaughter of the gray wolf, we demand that you immediately grant emergency relisting of the gray wolf. Now, I want to just let listeners know that we reached out to the Department of Interior. We requested that Secretary Haaland join us for this conversation. They declined. We also sent a list of specific questions to the Interior Department, including, you know, has the secretary responded to that September 14th letter from tribal leaders? If so, could they share what she sent? Did the secretary have a specific statement regarding where the Biden administration currently stands on the gray wolf's status? We also asked why the secretary has not yet met with tribal leaders following the requests that you had made, et cetera. So we sent a comprehensive list of questions, and the Interior Department sent back this statement. Under Secretary Haaland's leadership, the department is addressing the status of the gray wolf and all species according to the science and the law, and will continue to evaluate all options for doing so. That's the full statement. Now, Tom Rogers, you had said that there was supposed to be a meeting between tribal leaders and the secretary, but that never happened. Do you have a sense as to why?
In my conversations with the department, we did have a meeting secured. Unfortunately, previous to that meeting, we were told that the secretary had to had been requested to join the president at the climate change conference in Glasgow, Scotland, and that therefore she would not be able to take the meeting regarding our wolf request. Once again, that was dispiriting and disappointing. And faced with that, we made a presentation to the Assistant Secretary, Brian Newland, who is a good man, who is from Bay Mills, Michigan, whose own tribe celebrates the culture of the wolf. And so this is a, like I said, Meghna, it is a very somewhat of an innocence lost. And it is even more dark in a period of dark, extreme darkness in our country, because this was a wound from a fellow brother and sister. And that's the most hurtful.
Well, Tom, hang on here for just a second, because the Interior Department referred us to U.S. Fish and Wildlife, right, as the agency directly involved in decisions regarding the Endangered Species Act. And they sent us this statement that said, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently evaluating the status of gray wolves in the Northern Rockies and more broadly the Western U.S. to determine whether Endangered Species Act protection is again warranted. In the course of that review, we will assess whether the recent changes in state management are adequate to ensure that wolves in the Western U.S. are sustained at healthy and a secure population level. So did you want to respond to that?
Yes. Yeah, I think there are too many vestiges of colonialism still remaining in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department. I think there are still a number of career officials who anchor to a worldview and a culture of trophy hunting or harvesting, which is an Orwellian term for killing and massacring these beautiful, beautiful brothers and sisters. So I'm glad to hear that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will perform an autopsy on this issue when almost all of the wolves are killed in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho. So we're going to wait for them and their, as I said, their state-sanctioned extermination. And once almost all the wolves are dead, they will give us their decision. Mm. How incredibly forward-thinking, insightful. It's just representative, unfortunately, of a culture of killing that exists too much within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department. Mm.
Well, we reached out to several state-level lawmakers as well. We're going to hear a little bit from a state senator from Idaho a little later in the show about why they want to press ahead with more wolf hunts. But let's return to the Wisconsin story here. So, Tom, hang on for one moment, because I'd like introduce Adrian Wideven into the conversation. He's a wildlife biologist at the at Wisconsin's Green Fire, a nonpartisan group, and he was also formerly the wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and he led the state wolves management there for 23 years. He's with us from Cable, Wisconsin. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Magna.
So, overall, in the United States, Fish and Wildlife say there's what, more than 6,000 wolves in the United States now. And as I said earlier, what, more than 1,000 in Wisconsin. So how would you characterize the health of the wolf population there at the moment?
Well, currently, it's generally in good conditions. The population, as you had mentioned earlier, has really grown in Wisconsin. Wolves were totally extirpated in this region in the late 1950s. And at that time, the only gray wolves left in the lower 48 states would have been a population of 400 or 500 in northeastern Minnesota and perhaps a dozen or so animals on Isle Royale National Park. With the protection of the Federal Endangered Species Act of 1973 and then State Endangered Species Act, wolves were able to return to Wisconsin in the mid-1970s. And Wisconsin DNR's Department of Natural Resources started monitoring that population in 1979 and has had annual wolf counts 1980 onward. And that first year, they counted 25 wolves. And as you mentioned, it's over 1,000 wolves that were counted just recently in 2020. So the population in the Great Lakes region is doing quite well. And when we talk about delisting, this is actually the fourth time that gray wolf delisting has occurred in the Great Lakes region, which was first recommended by Bruce Babbitt, who was probably the most forward of wolf conservationists in the Department of Interior under President Clinton in 1998. So the efforts to delist wolves in the Great Lakes region has been a constant, an ongoing process, and it's reversed several times. So I think in this region, wolves are doing relatively well, but the hunt we had last winter in Wisconsin was overly aggressive, not necessary, and probably reduced the population several hundred animals below where we had been in recent times. So it didn't devastate the population, but it certainly lowered the population.
So I want to talk about that in a second here. But look, we're getting some very simple but important questions from our listeners who, you know, are hearing what's being said and perhaps even recalling what Fish and Wildlife said when they delisted the wolf last year, saying that the delisting is a success story for the animal. The goal is to get population numbers up high enough so that they get off the list. Darren Wilkinson just wants to know, is it an endangered species right now? I mean, Adrian, how would you answer that?
I would say in the Great Lakes region, it is not an endangered species, but certainly in other parts of the United States, it certainly continues to be an endangered species. And unlike previous delistings that occurred in the Great Lakes region, this time the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service chose to delist gray wolves across all of their range. And you mentioned there's 6,000-some wolves in the gray wolves in the lower 48 states, and two-thirds of those or three-quarters are in the Great Lakes region. So it's hard to say wolves have been thoroughly recovered across all of the United States when most of those wolves are living in three states. And I think that's part of the problem with the current delisting rule, that it was so broad in its coverage.
Mm. We've just got about 30 seconds to go before we have to take that next break. Tom Rogers, I'm wondering how you would respond to that same question from listeners who are saying, well, if there's a healthy wolf population across the United States, does it deserve ESA protections?
Well, that assumes you subscribe to the bad science that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have put out there, not only with regard to the wolf, but at the grizzly. It always seems that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife's culture, their marketing campaign is much further advanced than their research department. Mm.
Tom Rogers with the Global Indigenous Council and Adrian Wideven at Wisconsin's Green Fire. Hang on for a moment. Lots more to discuss about the gray wolf, about tribal sovereignty, states and the federal government when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just a little preview about what we're going to talk about on the show tomorrow. We're going to ask if the United States should redefine what poverty means in this country. From a policy level point of view, there's a number. It's a line, the poverty line. But what if we redefine poverty as being impoverished of support? How would that change lives for Americans earning no or very little income? So we want to hear from you. Are you living at or near that quote-unquote poverty line? Have you been there? What is life like? What kind of government assistance did you receive and did you not receive? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. We're going to talk about rethinking what poverty means in this country tomorrow on the show. Today, we are talking about the complex story that led to a wolf hunt in Wisconsin and other states about a year ago and the ongoing legal battle between tribal nations, states, and the federal government regarding the status of the gray wolf in North America. And I'm joined today by Tom Rogers. He's acting president of the Global Indigenous Council, also a member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana. He's with us from Washington. Adrian Wideven joins us from Cable, Wisconsin. He's a wildlife biologist with the nonpartisan group Wisconsin's Green Fire. Also formerly led the state's wolf management for more than 20 years at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And I want to just pick up a little bit more about the story of that February wolf hunt, Adrian, if we could. Because at the top of the show, I mentioned that the hunt only lasted 3 days, even though it was supposed to go longer than that, because many, many more wolves were taken much more quickly than anticipated. How can you just tell us more about that? How did that happen and unfold?
Well, in part that Wisconsin did have wolf hunting seasons in earlier years in 2012, 13, and 14 when they were previously delisted. But those were held in the fall, and the Wisconsin regulations that requires a wolf hunting season does not allow the use of dogs until after the firearm deer season, which is at the end of November. And those earlier hunts ended before that time period was reached, so they didn't involve the use of dogs. I should back up, too, to mention that in 2012, the state legislature dictated that a wolf hunting season shall occur in Wisconsin if they are not on the federal or state endangered species list, which gave the Department of Natural Resources not a lot of choice to whether to hold a hunting season or not. The department is required to hold a hunting season when they're off of those lists. And so you have a law that requires the hunting of wolves, which is unfortunate because it kind of ties delisting and hunting together, which should have been kept as separate issues. But in any case, then we had the department deciding in December of 2020 that they're going to wait until November 2021 to hold the first hunting season. But instead, because of a lawsuit, they're forced to hold this hunting season in February. And that was the first time we've ever had a hunting season in the middle of the breeding season for wolves, which is February. Mm-hmm. And most of the hunting being done with hounds, where we had very little experience of that practice. And we found that it was an extremely efficient way to quickly hunt wolves very quickly across the landscape and drastically over harvest the wolf quota system right. That the department had set. So combination of ideal conditions, a very effective system, being in the middle of the breeding season, all of those kind of led to this over harvest.
And just quickly, I mean, you said something there that's really important. It was because it was in the breeding season, and almost half of the wolves that were killed were female. Do we know how many of them were pregnant? I mean, could there be longer term consequences to that one hunt from a year ago?
That is an area of concern. Several of us were kind of investigating through summer howl surveys last summer to see if there was a reduction in number of pups produced in packs. We haven't quite finalized an analysis of that data, but there are also some animals that were examined by the Ojibwe tribes. Unfortunately, the Department of Natural Resources had chosen not to examine the carcasses of the animals that were harvested. In the previous wolf hunts, after the hunters removed the hides off of their carcasses, they turned them into the department, and the department did necropsies, autopsies on them. Unfortunately, they did not request those for this current hunt, so the number of breeding females that would have been pregnant, we really don't know, but a small sample that was reviewed or examined by the Ojibwe tribes indicated several of the adult females were pregnant, so that would have eliminated breeding potential for those packs this last spring and eliminate any pups in those packs. So we're suspecting there are quite a few packs that would have had no pups this last year because of that aggressiveness of this wolf hunt.
Yeah. Tom Rogers, I'm going to come back to you in just a second. But Adrian, I've got another question for you, because my understanding is that for those people who want the hunts to continue, there, you know, you heard earlier there's concern about the wolves' potential impact on livestock, other forms of property, etc. But also at the same time, I'm seeing and reading that there's even controversy amongst hunters themselves about the ways in which these hunts
take place, because there, if I understand correctly, there's baiting and trapping allowed, obviously in Wisconsin dogs as well. I mean, it doesn't seem to be at all that there's a sort of a clear consensus in terms of, like, how should the hunts be allowed to take place? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and that was one of the unfortunate things about the regulations that were written by the legislature in 2012, that traditionally the legislature had authorized the Department of Natural Resources with public input to kind of determine these things, the methods of take, the length of the season, what areas were open and closed to hunting. And unfortunately, the state statutes have all of that written into it. So it throws in the all kinds of methods for harvesting the wolf population far beyond what's necessary to provide some level of a hunting or hunting and trapping season. And the use of dogs, as you mentioned, is not authorized in any other U.S. state, and apparently is a very aggressive method that very quickly can overharvest a population.
Mm. Well, that happened. I mean, we know that happened in Wisconsin, right? Because of the overage for in terms of the what was supposed to be allowed to be taken, and the fact that only happened in 3 days, and more than 80% of the kills were with hunters using dogs. Now, Tom Rogers, I'm going to come back to you here because I would like to. Again, just remind folks, this is, even though we're focusing on Wisconsin, this is happening in many states across the country, Idaho being one of them. And last May, Idaho passed a law that allowed wolf hunting year-round without any limitations on the number of wolves that could be killed, as long as the wolf population in the state didn't go below 150 animals. Private contractors in Idaho are also allowed to kill wolves for the state. So we reached out to Republican State Senator Mark Harris of Idaho, who was one of the sponsors of the bills that allowed these new rules.
We deal with mountain lions, we deal with wolves, we deal with coyotes. And we didn't want the wolves when they were first introduced here, but we got them. It was a good day when the state of Idaho was able to take over the management of them. Senate Bill 1211 was just an effort by the producers and some legislators to give state of Idaho another few more tools than their toolbox to help manage these wolves and help manage the conflicts between the wolves and livestock and the elk herds.
Now, of course, indigenous groups, conservationists are saying that we haven't seen, in their words, a wolf slaughter like this in a century. But State Senator Mark Harris says the new law in Idaho is meant to manage the population, not eliminate it.
The fact is we're going to have them. We're going to have over 1,000 of them at all times, I believe. They are hard to hunt. They're here to stay. And so they're not dwindling. They're continuing to thrive. And the fact remains is we have too many, but in no way do we want to eradicate them.
Tom, I'd like to hear your response to that.
Well, once again, Magna, I'm glad to see that some of these people take comfort in their Orwellian language of harvesting, manage, toolbox. We at one time as Native people also had a problem with certain European ancestors. There's too many of them. Manifest destiny, doctrine of discovery. They cloak this massacre and these killings. They baited wolves the other day outside of Yellowstone Park with a bison carcass and then sat around and ambushed them. Eliminated an entire wolf pack. There is the problem in Wisconsin because of the hounds, which is abhorrent. And then you have the situation in the Northern Rockies, where you have these so-called men of honor, men of dignity, men of courage, who will bait these poor wolves and entice them just because of their own desire for survival, being the wolves. Will come to the carcass just outside the border of Yellowstone Park. Yes, the Yellowstone Park where suburban mothers and fathers come to enjoy have time with their children. Almost 4.5 million last year. And yet we have these men of honor and dignity, of such courage, who will wait and bait them and then massacre them and eliminate them. It is, like I said, it's Orwellian. I want to recite to you, Magna, what I recited to the Blackfeet Tribal Council. And it's a good guide for where we are on this issue and life in general. It says, you know now that anything could happen. Things that never happened before. Things that only happened in movies and nightmares are happening now, as if nothing could stop them. You now know that you are not safe. You know you live in fragile skin and bones, and that even steel and concrete can melt away, and that the Earth itself has come unhinged, shaken from its orbit around the sun. You know, now that anything can happen, it's hard to know what will. And what will you do now that you know? What words will you say now that you can say anything? What hands will you hold? And whose heart will beat beside you and inside you? I lost the two most important people in my life within 3 months, my mother and my partner, to dementia and cancer. And we've had so much death, 871,000 from the COVID-19, 110,000 from the opioid crisis, untold homicides, cancer, heart attacks, diabetes. And yet these individuals continue to celebrate and augment this culture of death. What they don't understand and have never understood, they should read the words of Chief Seattle, that we are all but one thread. The raping and killing of Native American women with missing murdered indigenous women is just reflecting of the raping and killing of Mother Earth. Mm. It is all the feminine. It is all intertwined. It is all a Jackson Pollock picture. It is one constant weaving of all threads. And what this culture of death continues to be endorsed and celebrated is they don't understand why we are out even now with COVID-19.
Yeah. You know, Tom, there's the moral layer that you're talking about here. And I also, very, very, very important, but I also want to return back to the legal part of this, right? Because there are, what, at least a half a dozen cases led by indigenous people and conservation groups to try to stop future hunts. And I think we should underscore something. I mean, what you're saying is that the federal government, even also under the Biden administration, and also, I will add, is violating extant treaties between tribal nations and the United States federal government. So just listen for a second. Yes. Here's Tim Presso, one of the lawyers representing the Ojibwe tribes in Wisconsin, trying to stop future wolf hunts. And here's why he says February's Wisconsin hunt, in their view, was illegal.
The issue involves treaties that the United States negotiated with the Ojibwe tribes in 1837 and 1842. And a really important thing to understand is these were treaties by which the Ojibwe gave to the United States certain lands, but also reserved certain things to themselves. So these weren't treaties that granted rights to the Ojibwe. These were treaties by which the Ojibwe granted certain things to the United States, but chose other things that they didn't grant.
That's Tim Presso, one of the lawyers representing the Ojibwe in Wisconsin. Now, we have 2 minutes left. Not enough, but I just want to tell you both we have 2 minutes left. First, Adrian, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds here. Is there any way to disentangle the federal rules from what you said the state rules in Wisconsin are to find a more sort of dynamic way to balance all the interests here regarding the wolves in Wisconsin?
Well, one of our hopes are to eventually get the state regulations overturned and establish a new set of regulations that give the department more authority. I think state wildlife agencies can manage wolf populations when populations have recovered if they're not burdened by excessive political involvement. And I think that's been the biggest problem in Wisconsin is too much politics involved in the management of the wolf population. Okay. I think the state agencies can do it if they're given the options, the tools to do it.
Tom Rogers, we have 30 seconds left. And speaking of politics, do you think politics is at play right now with the Interior Departments? And I return to Secretary Howland's not having yet met with tribal leaders. Is politics at play here regarding the silence you've been hearing from them?
I know that there are multiple voices on this, Magna, cross currents of interest. state senators, United States senators, governors. There are multiple voices. But what should guide all of these people? As things have gotten bad for all of us during this dark period in our nation's history. But what you do under stress, constant stress, reveals who and what you are.
Well, Tom Rogers, acting president of the Global Indigenous Council and a member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana, thank you so much for joining us today, Tom.
Thank you.
And Adrian Wideven, with us from Cable, Wisconsin, wildlife biologist with Wisconsin's Green Fire, was leading the state's wolf management for more than 23 years, formerly with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Adrian, thank you as well.
Thank you, Magda.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.